Searching for American Gods, an American Gods podcast, discussing the weekly television show on Starz Network, based off of the book by Neil Gaiman. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the US of A, and with me in the state of New York.
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how's it going?
I'm fine, Phil. How are you?
Good, good. We are actually recording this the same time as we have since Game of Thrones came on. But either way, I believe this is going to be our final episode for this season. We're about to do the Game of Thrones podcast that we decided that we were going to just combine the season wrap-up and the discussion of this episode all in one, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that sounds good. So for folks who don't know who we are or have interest about what we do when this podcast goes on hiatus, because as we mentioned, the podcast is over after this episode until season three, assuming there is a season three. But either way, we are at www.darkdiscussions.com. The reason for that is this is a spinoff of the Dark Discussions podcast. Co-host Mike and myself our co-hosts on the Dark Discussions podcast, along with three other co-hosts, where we discuss a genre film weekly, where we critique and analyze and review films such as horror films and science fiction and things like that. Also, we might do a couple other podcasts. We're doing You Know Nothing, Jon Snow, a Game of Thrones podcast right now as well. And we are discussing things such as each episode of the final season of that television show. Where you can find this podcast? You can find this podcast two places. You can find it on any place that podcasts are located, so Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, and of course darkdiscussions.com. But you can find it on two feeds. You can either searching for American Gods and American Gods podcast, where this podcast will be on that feed, or you can search for Dark Discussions podcast, which actually has all the podcasts that me and Mike are on, including this podcast. So if you want to hear us more than just on this podcast and hear us discuss Game of Thrones or genre films, you can basically go to Dark Discussions podcast RSS feed. Let's see, anything else, Mike, related to, I guess, the podcast and the network?
You can always find us on the Facebook discussion group if you want to contribute. You can email us at darkdiscussions@aol.com. Feedback is always welcome. Even though the podcast is going on hiatus for, you know, one to however many years that this takes to get third season, you're more than welcome to continue discussion. You mentioned previously how someone had about a year after the end of season two of Westworld and our podcast, Bullets, Brothels, and Bots, I discovered it, listened to the podcast, and started a discussion on that show on the discussion group. So even if you're listening to this, you know, weeks or months or even years after, you know, you will probably still be there and more than ready and willing to discuss and engage in any feedback you have, positive or negative, or just discussions in general.
Yeah, that's right. And that group is called Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook Group. And even though we won't have an episode next week, because again, this is the season finale and the wrap up of the season, you can still email us at darkdiscussions@aol.com and we will read your message on the next upcoming Dark Discussions podcast. As a matter of fact, because we do have a mail section on that podcast where we read emails from folks who listen to the various podcasts that we're on. Also, as Mike mentioned, it's darkdiscussions@aol.com is the email. All right, so I do have one email for us, and it's from a guy named Paul Hewson. Paul Hewson, I think he may have found us through the Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Review podcast that I do, but he may have also had been a Dark Discussions listener prior. But he actually emails us every so often, and he decided to email us about the American Gods podcast, or the show specifically. And this is what he had to say. He said, titled American Oh My Gods. He says, "Hi guys, just wanted to tip my hat to you for your American Gods podcast. You guys do a great job in reviewing and dissecting the show. You, Phil, and you, Mike, both have a nice balance with different points of view. Mike, more science history, and Phil, more philosophical. You two should do more shows together. I also enjoy the Westworld podcast that you do, which, Mike, you mentioned, which is called Bullets, Brothels, and Bots. Back to the AG podcast. I've never read the books, but personally, I'm not enjoying the show anymore. Now that they have the green light for a third season, I think they're going to drag this out even more. If it were not for the beautiful cinematography and pretty cool visuals, I would have bailed on the show long ago. The story has become secondary at this point. Again, thanks for the show and all your consistent podcast releases. For your reference, I'm a 50-year-old white married male with two daughters, an electrical engineer from Boston, and I enjoy your shows. Paul Hewson.
Sounds like he should be on the podcast.
Yeah, based off of what we've been saying about this show, yeah.
And just on his demographic, 50-year-old white male, married, two daughters, but from Boston.
College educated.
Yeah, you know, it's frustrating. I don't entirely know why. We were tempted after the second or third episode to maybe drop it, and then the fourth episode was, which I think was The Greatest Story Ever Told, was a lot stronger, and we chose to sort of stay with it.
Yep.
I think the Donner episode was like another one. I think when the show works, it works well. This is part of what's frustrating is they have the on-screen talent. They certainly have the pedigree with the story. If I understand correctly, they are dragging things out interminably with this second season. We don't need to rehash all the behind-the-scenes problems, but that is almost certainly going to be a contributor to this. Whatever problems Starz, I think, was having with the previous showrunners, it sounds like they had them even more or just as much with the replacement showrunners for the second season. And that's probably why there's yet another new showrunner coming from the third season. That particular showrunner seems to have a good track record. I still like the concept of the show. I like the cast quite a bit. Even if Matt Sweeney has been killed off, and we'll wait and see if that's in fact what has happened. There's potential there for a third season. I don't know how much patience I'm going to have for a third season if it's more of what we're getting here, because there was an awful lot of spinning wheels and not a lot of forward momentum.
That would be my opinion as well, Mike. Honestly, the first season, I wasn't a huge fan of, just for the fact that the show was magical realism or urban fantasy or dark fantasy, whatever you prefer to call it. And I'm not a huge fan of that genre anyway. And so when we did this podcast, I went in blind and had no idea. But generally, as you said, there's some strong talent in front of the camera, the actors and actresses and so forth. For the second season, the high points are as good as some of the high points in the first season, but they did have a number of episodes that seemed to go nowhere or drag the story out for God knows why, except to maybe make 8 episodes, to try to get 8 episodes. It kind of felt like the Hunger Games movies or the Twilight movies, where they basically took one book, or the Hobbit movies, and they took one book, and to extend it as long as they possible, they just fill it with everything and anything to try to make more lengthy thing. And as a result, some folks feel that this show among the Hobbit movies and whatnot may have been hurt or hindered because of that, because based off of what we've seen these two seasons, even if they do have some interesting lofty goals to try to, or philosophy to try to tell us, it seems like it could have been like a four-part miniseries rather than 16 episodes as we've had so far. I don't know your thoughts on that.
I think, you know, I was really ambivalent about this final episode. And so I was hunting around trying to get a grasp. And so I was reading a number of other reviews, and there were comments about the season. And I think one thing that's true is that this was a series that started out as an on-the-road story, a travel story with Shadow Moon and Wednesday. And for whatever reason, this season they chose to spend all 8 episodes in Cairo. And not all 8 episodes, but most of the 8 episodes in Cairo at the funeral parlor. And I'm wondering if that might have been a move to save budget. You know, plant one single set and stay there. Because we know cost overrun was a huge issue for season 1. And for a Starz TV series to run $30 million over budget, I can't blame them, the producers, for being upset about that. But I don't think this was the right answer. And so you ended up having all the characters, or most of the characters, staying in one location and giving excuses for why they kept coming back to that one location that I don't think was ever satisfactorily explained. I don't think the area was interesting enough to stay there for the entire time. The show had no sense of moving forward, which kind of hurts when you're supposed to be a road show. And now that they're moving on, I don't get the sense of any loss that they are leaving a place, or a sense of accomplishment that they've achieved what they needed to have achieved there. It just feels like they were sitting around waiting for something to happen, and you know, and they just got bumped along. And I'm not even sure where they're headed now going forward into next season.
Now, a side note, I think the main reason this show was greenlit was probably because when folks speak of dark fiction, obviously Stephen King is the first name that folks think of. But when you get to the other, not necessarily household names, but names that have a cult following or are well known, in at least in groups, names like Dean Koontz and so forth, as does Neil Gaiman. And when I heard of Neil Gaiman, this is the book that I always hear of. I know some people say it's that comic Shadow Man what is it? Is it Shadow Man?
Sandman,
yeah. That people talk about a lot. But for novels, it's usually this one. So I think the people who greenlit and decided to make the show were probably thinking, oh, this is a remarkable property. It's a well-loved book by at least a certain group of people. Maybe this could be the next, TV show that will catch on. And I think they may have made the mistake thinking that a semi-popular book by a fairly large group of people in a small demographic was enough to think it would be a series that could catch on. And yet, I'm curious, did these folks who produced the show originally decided to look at it and say, well, maybe actually reading the book, this is more of a niche audience? Because again, I know, for example, True Blood is also a mystical realism or urban fantasy, dark fantasy, whatnot. But it's more in the real world, in a sense. In other words, it's not metaphysical things like we see in this show here, as well as it also has vampires, werewolves, and furies. And those things, you know, there's big groups of people that love that type of stuff. So I'm wondering if it was a group of folks that just didn't think forward enough before making it. And again, it doesn't mean that it doesn't deserve to be made, but thinking that it was going to be the success that they probably thought it was going to be may have been a mistake.
Well, one of the frustrating things in speaking generally is that you have no control over who adapts it. And so you can get a terrible adaptation, and the terrible adaptation will just convince people that the story shouldn't have been adapted in the first place. It may be that they just have the wrong people adapting it, or the wrong approach to the adaptation. Again, a limited series might have been the better way to go. Or something. I'm not even sure at this point. You know, Hollywood is weird. You know, the question is, you can ask, why did they greenlight it in the first place? And I think part of it, and I said this way back when Walking Dead was first successful, that once one genre show is successful, that it will trigger copycats. And I don't know if they were looking for their own Game of Thrones or their own American Horror Story or what they were looking for. Neil Gaiman has another successful series of a loose adaptation of his comic book Lucifer on Fox. He is a successful author, but American Gods is not exactly, I don't know, it's not exactly Cujo. You know, it's not as, you know, as well known as a Stephen King story, or Pet Sematary.
Mike, if I could interject for 1 second, and as we've seen with Stephen King, even some of his stuff bombs pretty quick, whether it was the Mist TV show or Under the Dome or that 11-whatever-62,
right,
which got bad reviews. So even someone as high profile as King and as beloved as King and as a household name as King shows that his stuff isn't necessarily going to be the next Westworld or American Horror Story or Game of Thrones either.
Right.
So continue.
Yeah, but even like Under the Dome, which I thought was okay in its first season, it became absolutely ridiculous and horrible as it went on. Literally some of the worst television I've ever watched. But once my wife started watching it, wouldn't let us stop watching it. You know, it's successful enough to have lasted 3 seasons. You know, so that was the same thing, taking one story, stretch it out into 3 years. I don't know if that was what they were thinking of copycatting, whatever was their inspiration. You have a central idea, real gods walking around in modern America. And I think you can get a TV series out of that. I don't know if they're being too adherent to the story, not adherent enough, or not bold enough in their side quests. I mean, where Mad Sweeney was a character who I guess appeared in 2 scenes, you know, they fleshed him out into a real character. That tells me there was enough there that they can flesh out this world. I think they would just allow themselves to be held back. They really were hamstrung with what they did with Kristen Chenoweth. Because when she left, they just completely dropped what was clearly going to be a major story arc for the second season, which was the famine, right? The idea that Wednesday's plan to starve the fuckers into turning back to the old gods, you know, and it just got brushed aside as, well, she's mad at me for running over her bunnies. It's just, you know, it wouldn't have been ideal, but recast her. You know, follow up on that, or unless they just said, not only are we going to not recast her, but it's too expensive to do this story, so we're not going to do it. And so that hamstrung them, right? You know, they had to kind of come up with a new story on the spot, and I don't think they ever figured it out. And, you know, they have to spend a couple of episodes doing some damage control by having to spend time figuring out what to do with media.
Right.
Because they can't just have her disappear. They have to have, you know, kind of a half-assed explanation as to why she disappears and why they get a new media. And that works as far as it goes. But, you know, new media works as a concept, but she also is, the type of character that she is kind of, you know, and somebody who's, you have to watch her for too much might become annoying and irritating. I mean, does anyone really enjoy watching the personification of all the stuff we hate about new media, you know, of online media, social media?
Right, right.
You know, so she's the bubbly Japanese schoolgirl and hasn't shown us to be anything but that yet. And that's not a fault of the actress. I think it's an issue with who the character is. And she doesn't have much to play off of. You know,
right, right. If I can interject for a second, her character, they've made a one-trick pony with a certain identity, while the character she replaced, you know, played three different characters, at least what we saw in David Bowie, Marilyn Monroe, Lucille Ball. So her character is like you said, it's just a Japanese schoolgirl versus her character she's replacing, which was kind of more interesting if you look at it that way.
And they show this week they have her being portrayed by several different people, right? They have different actors' faces coming through the screens as her.
Right.
And that's the first time we've seen that, and that might be a good tack to continue with the actress as the behind-the-scenes new media, and then someone else as the interface, sort of like when, you know, she popped up as Lucille Ball in the second episode of the first season. You know, right. She came through the TV. So you have a character playing Lucille Ball or whomever, if you couldn't find an actress who was as versatile, you know, or maybe just it's cheaper to do it that way, whatever. But I'm saying so that already stalls the momentum. It stalls story action. Undoes character development and storylines. Then you have the problem that we end up with a big revelation in this episode that I don't think anybody is surprised by.
Truth.
In fact, I was kind of hoping it wouldn't be because it seemed really on the nose and very obvious. So I was kind of hoping they were going somewhere else with it. Apparently they didn't. And that just makes your central character look weak for not knowing what everybody else kind of figured out, you know, a year and a half ago. That's another trick in writing, is that you never want the audience really far ahead of where you are and where your characters are, because your characters just come across as stupid. You want the audience. You don't want the audience too far behind. You want the audience at least with the characters, maybe a little ahead of them, because audiences like feeling smart. You know, you want to make sure the clues are there. But once the audience gets that it's really a werewolf who's killing people in town, or vampires, or whatever it is, you don't want it to be too long before your characters figure it out as well.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, for example, the example you just mentioned, usually when you go see a werewolf movie, you pretty much know that you're going into a horror film that has werewolves. So they have to do different things to keep the suspense going. Here, we obviously knew there was American Gods, in the sense that we learned pretty quick that certain characters are the embodiment of Odin and various other gods. So
we get that. So we were expecting to have gods somehow interacting with people on this show. The surprise obviously should have been Shadow Moon and who he was. But as we saw, even in season one, they gave out enough hints that we pretty much, me and you, had already said there was a good chance, probably on our third or fourth episode of season one, if not episode one for that matter, that Shadow Moon is probably the illegitimate son, or a son that was born between Odin and a woman that it was unmarried to him. And sure enough, the big reveal for the season finale of season two is something that we already knew probably 15 to 16 episodes ago. And as a result, the episode tonight, which is called Moon Shadow, where me and you were discussing throughout this season that the finale is most likely going to be the start of the war between the gods. And instead, the big reveal wasn't the war between the gods. It was, guess what? Shadow Moon's a demigod because he's half god, because his father is actually Odin. And that isn't necessarily shocking at all, because as I just stated, you and I, and probably many of the people who watch the show that haven't read the book, probably figured out that Shadow Moon was Odin's son back in maybe episode one, two, or three of last season.
Or it's certainly a strong possibility that they never did anything to dissuade us from believing. I mean, you get a round fired, a shot fired, right? I guess you could argue last season started with Wednesday declaring war by, destroying Spring. And here's kind of the return volley for that. But even that, I'm a little confused as to how it was executed. So, some of the pieces, starting to get the hiccups. Some of the pieces come together, you know, because they mentioned the argument. Sorry about that. They mentioned the Argus system. They mentioned the we have the return of the executive, right, the CEO.
Yep.
You know, all this results in a high-tech lynching, right? And high-tech swatting, right? If people don't know for some reason what swatting is where you make a call to the police about someone that, whether it's as a prank or something you don't like, and get the police to, you know, to bust down their door because they think you're a drug dealer or what have you, whatever it is they say about you. So this is basically that. And so I guess in some ways it does pull together some of the threads for this season. But then, I mean, did I miss it? Did I misunderstand? Don't they say at one point in the episode that it was revealed as a hoax?
That's a good question, Mike. I don't know. I just thought once he found out, meaning Shadow Moon found out that he was some sort of demigod or whatever, he was... And he indirectly had it stop. And then, in other words, all the stuff that people were seeing that was basically the what did you call it again when you call in the cops on someone?
Swatting?
Yeah. The swatting was happening. Once he found out he was a demigod, he somehow stopped it from happening, and then it just was erased, meaning anybody who was watching the news who thought these three people, meaning Wednesday, Celine, and Shadow Moon were these evil criminals, anybody who was watching it suddenly had it erased from their mind as if it never happened.
And yet they're still looking for Shadow Moon at the end. Or at least Shadow Moon is concerned that they're looking for him. We don't actually know who they were looking for when they pulled the bus over. And he's got new ID. And that's supposed to be significant.
That's a good point, Mike.
Yeah. Right, we see the SWAT team, the police moving in on the funeral parlor. Nothing really comes of it. So this is again sort of, I was afraid that, you know, I thought Salim was going to be a goner. Wasn't. Because, you know, something to further shake the story up. And I really, now that if Matt Sweeney's in fact dead, I think he might be my favorite character on the show now. Because I find him more accessible and identifiable.
Which character is this, Mike?
It's Salim.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But, so I expected once he got listed in the name there that, well, they obviously aren't going to kill Shadow Moon, and they're not going to kill Wednesday, I guess, because he wasn't even there. So when they were when the police are descending upon the funeral parlor, I expected it to be Salim that ends up being killed. But he didn't. And, you know, again, I don't know why the attack was called off. You know, the whole thing is a play on what they were talking about with War of the Worlds. You know, that using new media, using fake news to gin up hysteria. And it doesn't matter if it's real or not. If the media can convince people it's real, it's real. And that certainly has some significance in the world that we live in. It is a perfectly valid point, in a way, when you talk about the world that we live in. But it also seemed, if I understood it correctly, and if anyone's listened to the other podcast, the American Gods podcast, podcast, You Know Nothing, Jon Snow podcast, I was still kind of recovering from chaperoning a senior class trip, so I was not in the best and most alert frame of mind while watching the show last night. So I may be unclear on points, but I it sure seemed to me like this just got dismissed with a wave of the hand when you saw media saying, you know, there was just a hoax. So maybe I missed something.
Well, yeah, that makes me curious too, Mike, because I do have the Wikipedia up because I was going to read off the director, writers, and an amount of folks who watched the show. So I'll just do that quick. Christopher Byrne, who did the episode one of season two, did this one as well. And it's written by Didi, Brendan Capel, and Jim Danger Gray. Capel wrote episode four, or co-wrote episode four, The Greatest Story Ever Told. Well, Jim Danger Gray, I don't think he's... This may be his debut. April 28th, 2019, and it was 0.272 million viewers, which is the lowest besides Donna the Great. So the season finale actually was one of the 15th out of 16th lowest rated episodes, which is kind of interesting for a season finale. But to get back to what you were saying... as I was brought this up, I have the wiki up anyway, and it says Shadow Moon learns that Wednesday is his father, making him a demigod. He unwittingly uses his powers to cancel new media's manipulations, making the new news crews and police disappear. The djinn leaves with Salim to protect him. Lara walks away with Sweeney's body over her shoulder, which now makes me and probably you, Mike, wonder if Sweeney will actually be resurrected. And then Shadow heads north on a bus alone, and when stopped by police, he pulls out his ID and is surprised to find he has a new identity. And that's interesting, because if the news crew and police disappear, why does he need the new identity after all? And That's a really good point and a question. I did look at the identity, and it's from some town in Wisconsin, I believe. And
yes.
I wasn't sure if it had any meaning or not. I didn't bother looking up that town further to see if it had some special
meaning. It was Lakeside.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. I don't know if it has any special meaning like Cairo did or whatnot. But again, a lot of these locations where people meet, whether it's House on the Rock, whether it's Cairo, whether it's that mansion on episode 8 of season 1 where they meet Easter, the locations never really seem to amount to anything except for they're cool. Because nothing about those locations really have moved the story, at least in my opinion. I may be wrong, but... So whether Lakeview has any significance, I don't know. I mean, and that's how it ends, right? That he has the new identity. The season finale.
Yeah, and I think if we were to look back at the season, I could easily remove several episodes from this. As much as I liked the Donar episode, that was not a significant episode in terms of the the amount of time they spent on the Donar storyline could have been removed.
Yeah.
Quest to the first dwarf could have been removed.
Yeah.
Shadow Moon being abducted early on could have been removed. None of it really, Argus could have been removed. None of this really amounted to anything. And I think audiences would have been left. I think I would have been more satisfied if we had gotten this revelation 2 or 3 episodes earlier and been able to see, to see Shadow Moon confronting Wednesday over it and dealing with it rather than just leave us on this, cliffhanger with no real resolution to it.
Right. Right. Yeah, the war still really hasn't fought. I mean, this war has been basically two sides just staring at each other, doing nothing, really.
Right, and this is, right now, it feels to me like, when North Korea does something to try to rattle sabers, or China does something, or the United States, in the Cold War, the United States and Russia might do things that would, test each other, that would kind of poke each other, but nobody was ever going to really pull the trigger. And that's about it. And that feels what we're doing here. But again, we don't even have a good grasp, as we mentioned in last week's episode, what either side is doing and why. So we now know that nobody likes Wednesday and nobody trusts Wednesday. And I'm fine with that. But then are we, what exactly are we rooting for with Shadow Moon? Why is he even involved in this and not just walking away? Because Shadow Moon, you're a god too. All right, so now he's got a reason to want answers. That's fair. That's certainly fair. But it took a long time to get here. And as a guy who has had so little to do in this season, this could have given him something to do. This is an important thing. It would have helped this character out tremendously if they had found this out, 3 or 4 episodes earlier. And there's so much stuff, the whole thing about the lynching, that was just spinning wheels, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, that's another episode that probably could have been cut out, right?
Yeah, last episode, Bilquis was a priest. Now
she's a sex goddess again.
Offering Shadow, or offering an apple or eating an apple, in front of Shadow Moon, which is, again, really blatant symbolism,
Right. And naked, meaning, very tempting, plus
right.
The apple symbolizing the sexuality and, whatever.
Yeah, they need to. And my understanding, so the character Michael Aislinn and Lakeside, I know, factor into the novel, which I decided not to read because I kind of want the series to make its own impression on me and not be comparing it to the book. But as I said in previous episodes, I'm going back and checking afterwards to see where some of these connections come in. And something significant happens at Lakeside, Well, then why couldn't we have done that this episode? Why are we dragging this out? My understanding is this is only, I don't even know if we're halfway through the novel at this point.
Now, that name that you mentioned, is that the one that was on his ID?
Yeah.
Okay. And
it's an ID that, it's a fake ID that, or name that I think Wednesday makes for him in the book. as one of their schemes or one of their con jobs, I'm guessing. If anyone's listening to this and knows better and wants to shed some illumination, please feel free. But again, why not do this earlier?
No, and I agree. I mean, again, I wasn't sure where they were going. You've kind of felt a number of episodes, as we, you know, the eight that we've done for this season, that you were thinking that the war was going to have some huge significance in the season finale, and that makes sense. And yet, that didn't happen. The big reveal was something that we all kind of knew anyway. And still, there is no war between the gods. We do have a few other storylines that happen too, where Lara now says that she's going to kill Wednesday because she's pissed that, or blames Wednesday for the death of Sweeney Todd. So
Matt Sweeney,
I keep on saying that. Matt Sweeney, which is kind of funny because everybody on this show seems to have a love-hate relationship with everybody else. So one moment she wants him to go away and never see him again. And the next minute she's devastated he's dead and wants vengeance. And then she takes his body with her. So, you know, I'm assuming this is not an alternate reality. So it's kind of weird how she's walking down the street carrying a body. I don't know how that's going to play out. And then we have Shadow, like you said, heading to Lake View, right? Or Lake, what's the name of that? Yeah, so I wasn't sure if it was just a fake ID or if he was actually going to be heading to the place that's actually on the ID. And based off of what you said, it appears that he will. So I think that many people who stayed with the show, and again, it doesn't seem like there's many, it's only 0.272, which is, again, the 15th out of 16 episodes in total viewership, meaning the season finale, which is supposed to be like the season opener, to be, you know, one of the higher viewed episodes. It appears that it didn't bring people in, and whether or not people felt the war was going to happen, like I assume you did and I did, that wasn't enough to bring people in either. So those who did stay to watch, who haven't read the book anyway, who don't know about this new persona, were probably left somewhat disappointed, I would think.
Well, I think it was Slash Film. Screen Rant, that had an article about the American Gods ratings for this season that I was reading today. And they point out a few things besides the obvious stuff that we talked about behind the scenes. But just one of the things they mention is that one of the reasons why the ratings have dropped is because if Kristen Chenoweth and Gillian Anderson really actually do have a solid fan base that follows them, you know, and so does Brian Fuller, and losing them off the show might have been something that does cost some viewers. I mentioned that my wife, after we talked about their departure in the first or second episode this season, that my wife told me that they were the reason she was watching the show in the first place. So that doesn't help. I do think them overlapping with Game of Thrones does not help. Certainly not with this last episode, The Long Night, was that their highest rated show for American Gods this season? Not American Gods.
Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones?
Yeah, I believe it was, yeah.
And that's a 90-minute episode. Right? So yeah. It was the event show. Right, so you know that there were probably going to be people with, like, viewing parties and things like that. I'm sure American Gods will pick up some on the back end, you know, the streaming audiences and on-demand and later airings of the episode. But there was no sense of urgency this season to anything. No sense of threat, no threat of danger. The closest you had to ticking clock was Laura's decaying body. And the only real signs we got of that were people continuing to point out how badly she smelled, you know, or, and even that was kind of fixed in the Argus episode, which was, I think, episode three?
Yes.
So it didn't become all that urgent for her to get fixed. So, yeah, they just kind of meandered, you know, and, yeah, well, that explains some of the sort of downward trends in the ratings. And I don't know what, and the problem with ratings decay, it's really hard to get back. You know, you can decay and decay and decay. Something, it's hard for a show to hold its ratings over time. Very few shows can continue to keep their ratings. Now you have a, certainly when they start out, it's a phenomenon out of the gate. Usually what happens is that you start out with a certain set of ratings. People hear about it. They catch on. They draw people in. You hit, you know, you crest after, three or four seasons in. And then you start to dwindle. And that's because at some point people just lose interest in the show. And it's really hard to get people back once they've lost interest. One of the things that Walking Dead is going to be fighting is the fact that they had two seasons that really were below par in quality, and the last season, most people agree, was a huge improvement. It was their best season in years, but all that's going to do is keep the people watching who held on, and most of those at that point were diehard faithful fans. You know, they're not going to it's not really going to bring back people who they lost. You know, TV is a habit, and if you're not in the habit of watching, and that's another problem, is Game of Thrones, as American Gods, disappeared for over a year, for close to 2 years. People lost that habit.
Right. Yeah, well, and that's the thing. It's like, for example, I used to watch The Strain, and I felt that was a fun show. Whether it was good or not is debatable, but I thought it was a fun show. I liked The Colony. I liked Falling Skies, and various other shows. And they go on hiatus. And, you know, for 5-6 months, and I, you know, go out and take walks in the forest, or hang out with my kids, or play video games, or do podcasts. And so when the shows reappear again, I just didn't get back into them and forgot about them. And so a show like this here, American Gods, with, I guess you could argue, American Horror Story was another one that I used to watch and I just stopped. That, you know, if you're going to have a show like this where folks are slowly dwindling away, never mind, you know, a year or two later, then, yeah, I mean, that shows you that its success really now is based off of something else. It's like you said, maybe they're expecting the back end. People will come buy the discs, watch it through VOD later, or they think they can ship it off to iTunes, because Apple's coming out with a station too, but Netflix or Amazon or whatnot, and maybe make syndication money or whatever type. However it's called when they have a show and they loan it off to Netflix or whatever. So I don't know. Maybe that's what they're looking at this point, because like you said, I can't believe they think that season 3 will suddenly have ratings upgrades or anything of that nature. So I am not sure what would make this show survive, say, for another season with the limited audience, whether people like the show or not. And other shows like Falling Skies or The Colony or Santa Clara Diet that just, you know, I dropped.
Yeah. And it's, you can look at Breaking Bad, you can look at Game of Thrones. They're both shows that Breaking Bad started out with relatively low ratings and but built, and it built largely on word of mouth, but it also built because
it went to Netflix.
It went to Netflix, and people were catching it on Netflix, and it was a really good show. You know, Game of Thrones started out well and continued to build on word of mouth and people catching it on streaming or on disc, and they kept watching because it was a really good show. You know, and by the time you got to the third season of Game of Thrones and you had the Red Wedding, it had become a water cooler series where people would gather around, you know, in their lunchrooms at work the next day, or chat online on social media and, you know, talk about, you know, remember the meme of, you know, the people recording themselves or watching their, you know, recording their significant other watching the Red Wedding and their shocked faces. And,
yeah, I remember that.
People, and so people watch it because they didn't want to get left out. Well, what's happened this season to do that? You know, you can go through every season of Breaking Bad, and like, these are phenomenal shows. These are some of the best shows TV's ever made. You can't ask every show to get there, but they're the ones that defied gravity. They started out lower and got higher and higher and higher ratings as the series went on. That is bizarre. It does not happen. It took two of the very best shows TV's ever produced to get that to happen. Is there anything that they've done this episode, or sorry, this season in American Gods to really garner that kind of chat? It's not been that good. It's been pretty mediocre. It's been meandering. But they haven't even had, you know, an earned moment of shock or surprise or heightened dramatic tension to really grab the viewers. And like I said, it's even the death of Matt Sweeney just kind of felt, and maybe, and I'm speaking for myself here, even the death of Matt Sweeney last week just, yeah, okay, if it didn't feel like it was something as shocking as it should have been.
I agree. Yeah, I mean, when we discussed on last episode of the Searching for American Gods podcast how anticlimactic his death was, and based off of how we looked at it when we took a step back, we could tell that they were supposedly making that an important and shocking moment in the penultimate episode of season two. And yet, for whatever reason, it was like a shrug, at least from me, and it appears from you too.
Right. Well, when the Red Wedding happened on Game of Thrones, and we'll avoid spoiling too much if for some reason somebody hasn't watched it, they killed off, I think, four significant characters in one fell swoop in that episode that had the Red Wedding in it, that people were not expecting to get killed off. That shocked people, and it surprised people, and, you know, it was a huge oh my god moment. Again, the biggest moments here in this season were Matt Sweeney being killed off, but he's been so disconnected from everything that's been going on, we don't even know what impact it has on the series. And the revelation that Shadow Moon is the son of Odin, which should have also gotten a collective shrug because everybody knew it. You know, we have characters in Game of Thrones now, you know, with the big episode last night, that died that everybody knew was going to die, so it doesn't get quite the same shock for that particular reason. It's not going to get that, oh my god, can you believe they killed off so-and-so? It's like, yeah, we all knew they were going to do it. They telegraphed it weeks, months, years ago. The character was never going to make it to the end of the series. And we're at the end of the series. So, yeah, of course they died. And so you can't build buzz by doing things that the audience already knows you're going to do, by killing off characters that don't seem to have a consequential place in the series. When you don't have an idea of what the stakes are, when there is no urgency, there's no forward momentum. You know, again, scene by scene, moment by moment, the show isn't bad, but it's failing to to congeal into a cohesive whole. And that's not good. And that has to fall on the showrunner.
Yeah, to be honest, as we've discussed a lot, these eight episodes of season two of Searching for American Gods, is the fact that a lot of the scenes are interesting, but they seem to be more of like a political or religious or a philosophical or even a metaphysical commentary between two, three characters discussing topics that may or may not be important to, I guess, the modern world. And so that's fine, and those are interesting. But again, as you just stated, they aren't necessarily cohesive to the main story, and they feel like almost like little vignettes. In other words, in season one, they had vignettes at the beginning of pretty much every episode, which were kind of interesting, and they ran for 3 to 5 minutes. Then you had your credits, and then you had the story. Here, in season two, they have the same thing in the sense they have vignettes, yet the vignettes are with our main characters, and they are also in the middle of what's supposed to be the main story. And though they say a lot about the characters, about what I guess the showrunner and writers are trying to say, whether philosophically, politically, religiously, whatever, they unfortunately don't do anything for the story itself. Because if you just boil away all that, there is supposed to be a story here. And if the story is just there to be the skeleton for vignettes or philosophical discussions, that may be a problem, because again, you want flesh on your skeleton. You don't want, hanger-ons. Our skeleton isn't supposed to be a Christmas tree with ornaments hanging off it. It's supposed to be the tree itself with leaves and stuff. So I think that may be a problem, because they're looking at interesting ideas that don't fit on the story, with the story, or what the story is supposed to be.
Yeah, this episode you got your vignette in the War of the Worlds story.
That's true, yes.
Which I, weirdly enough, saw some people commenting that, well, it didn't really happen like that, and I think that misses the point, because even if it didn't really happen that way, the point of the show is that if people believe it did, then it did. Right? That's the point of that.
Sure.
That rant. So I grew up believing that it really happened. I know I read in books that it really happened. You know, the way
me
that
too.
It did.
Me too. Yep.
You know, that obviously the actual radio play happened, and some people bought into it. But the idea that there was mass hysteria seems to be largely an American myth. So the fact that even that's a myth plays into the theme of the episode tonight. So it doesn't matter that it's real as long as people believe. And you get Crispin Glover doing his best Crispin Glover. And I think that was an interesting segment. You know, but it was also, it felt like a fairly long one of these segments, and probably longer than it needed to be to get the point across.
Yeah.
And to me, that was probably the best part of the episode. And
I would concur too.
It's not really a good thing when the best part of your season finale is not the finale, but the beginning of the finale. It's frustrating, and it's because the potential is there, I think. And it's one of those things where I know I'm watching the whole season, I'm wanting to like the show, and I'm not liking the show. It's, I've got everything you should want, and it's not quite getting there. There were little things. We finally got, again, Shadow Moon standing up on his own. 16 episodes in, is taking way too long for him to have a pair of balls. With Laura Moon and him waking up in the cemetery, sitting on the sarcophagus, and we find out how he got the nickname Puppy, and that's fine. That was not an urgent thing that we needed to have told us earlier on, and him finally standing up and basically telling her, don't call me Puppy anymore, which is asserting his authority, because the whole idea is that he followed her like a puppy, you know, and that he was a follower. So this is giving us some sense of, you know, he's kind of found his manhood. He's, you know, standing up for himself, which he hasn't done. He took the fall for with the casino heist. You know, so this is an important character moment for him. Should have come so much earlier in the season. You know, these two characters have been kept apart since the first episode of the season. You know, and I'm not sure why.
Right, right.
And clearly he's changed his mind a bit about Odin when she says, I'm going to kill him. Are you okay with that? And he just says it's a free country. You know, so he's not saying he's okay with it, but he's not going to stop her either. And he appears to be kind of written her off. I'm not entirely sure how much reason we have to justify his now disinterest.
Indifference.
Yeah. Given where he was with her. I mean, didn't they say that this has been like the murder in the police station was like 10 episodes ago? Or not 10 episodes, 10 days ago?
That's actually a good point, yeah.
So he was beside himself with frustration and anger and grief over his wife, and she comes back from the dead, and he's like, whatever. You know, I'm having trouble placing what has happened in the interim. Obviously, she found out that she was unfaithful. Oh, actually, you know what? He found out that she fucked...
Yeah, his friend or something.
Yeah, Matt Sweeney. Well, but she also found out that Matt Sweeney...
Oh, that's right, yeah.
So that at least justifies that, right? Because even then, it's like, it's a one-time thing, it was a mistake, I'm sorry, and then she fucked Matt Sweeney. You know?
Right, right.
Now, we know there are reasons that she was on drugs, or hallucinogens, or... But, whatever. You know, they've been telling us all along that maybe the magic between them isn't what they want it to be. Their relationship isn't worthwhile.
Right, right. Well, and we're figuring she needs blood of someone that loves her or something. And we're assuming it's Shadow, but Shadow's off with Wednesday and the African gods and not saying, where's my wife? We want to try to find my wife. Why aren't we finding my wife? So, you know, that's kind of an interesting, or I should say, disinteresting aspect of that whole storyline. And then based off of her, she sees the beacon where he is, but she keeps on, obviously trying to find a way to become mortal again. And the thing is that she, at the end of this episode, after her fight with Shadow Moon, she's now carrying the body of Mad Sweeney, who may or may not be the person that has the blood, I guess. That's all I'm thinking, because why would they have gone with Mad Sweeney's backstory of him following this woman from Ireland to the U.S., you know, 200 years ago, 150 years ago, and basically that woman is the direct ancestor of Lar, supposedly. So it makes sense that they would hook up together or something would be related to the blood would be his and whatnot. And yet the story prior to that, up until the point where Shadow Moon finds out she banged Sweeney, then he is like, okay, whatever, I'm done. And it felt a little anticlimactic, I felt. I think I would have been more interested in seeing them fight over their relationship and how they screwed it up again than a 2-minute scene that really was just like to move the story forward.
Well, if the actor had been portraying the character as more passionate, and if he'd been doing more stuff, his indifference might have left more of a mark. But he's been so indifferent to everything that's been going on up till now, and just been to me, and just been kind of going with the flow, and frustrated. Another scene of frustrated indifference. It doesn't have a resonance to it. And so it's just him playing the same note. And I don't get the sense that this is the choice of the actor. We've seen the actor be able to portray different emotions. It's just the way the character is being written.
Yeah, because the character was pretty solid. Like those flashback scenes when he gets, does the casino thing and all that. Those scenes, he was really good, right? The actor was really good.
Right, and when he plays the FBI agent.
Oh, right, yeah.
In the Donner episode.
Yeah, exactly. So it's really just they just haven't had anything for the character to do, really, this season, it seems. And so his character's been written thinly.
Right, and this is something that, as my understanding, is how writer's room works on TV shows. And, TV shows are not a director's medium. The directors are important, but TV shows are a writer's medium. The writers are the ones that are there every week. Even when you are, when a show hands off an episode to a specific writer, every episode, the main beats of the episode are usually done collectively by the group, especially in a serialized TV series. It's just the specific credited screenwriter is the one who puts all the pieces together, right? And puts their own little flair onto it. So one of the things that they do at the beginning of a season is say, what are we doing with this character? What's doing this character? What are the main arcs? What are the main beats for these characters? And I don't know what the main beats for Shadow Moon in this season were. He runs into the decapitated head on a pike of a person who was lynched. He kills Matt Sweeney. He finds out Odin is his dad. That he gets kidnapped, and that in the first two episodes. And that's okay, that's a thing, but that's not a thing that he does anything.
Right. Or
that's not a story, plot point involving him, but he spends the episode being tortured. Let's flip around to the Reek storyline in Game of Thrones, where we know why the character has been, is kind of tortured. It's important character development thing. The character who is kidnapped and tortured changes completely from the before and the after. We see the impact it has on the character. We suffer with the character. So it is a thing for the actor to do. It is a thing for the character. Here, if you had missed, let's say you had just tuned in to episode 4 of season 2 of American Gods, after having watched the first season, you wouldn't even really know that anything had happened to him.
True.
He's in the same place kind of that he was.
True.
So, it's unfortunate. I think the show has potential, but I think the best thing for them at this point, and who knows, because there isn't the season announced and series have been pulled, or cut short based on early renewal that doesn't turn out the way they had planned. And clearly they went, the numbers coming back were stronger than the numbers at the end of the season. Who knows if they're regretting their decision now. So who knows what happens with the third season if they get the full eight episode order. I think the best thing they could probably do is announce an end date. And because this is something that has a specific ending built into it, and say, we have to hit it. And whether it's the end of third season or end of fourth season, have an end date and drive towards that and get things moving and stop stalling. And make sure you're putting Shadow and Laura, at the center of it, because they should really be our two leads at this point.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, they basically set up the next season to be the lead, those two as the leads. They're on their separate journeys, but still the leads. So if they go back to what they did this season and have these secondary characters be the focus of these weird vignettes talking about philosophical things, or have Shadow Moon just twiddling his thumbs again, or Lara, similar to Wednesday, just going from point A to B to C to D to like in a video game, then they may have problems again, because then it would be just repeating similar. And even season one was that way too. Maybe not as of bad as they've done it in this season, but both seasons are really just going forward to various locations, doing various quests, and yet we still are waiting for the war, and we're also still waiting for how the guards interact with, I guess, the regular world, right? Because
yeah, well, I mean, there's been a lot of TV series built along road stories, right? You know, go to the Prisoner, The Incredible Hulk, Supernatural, Highway to Heaven. You know, I could just think of a whole bunch of shows, you know, of varying quality, some great, some mediocre, some had lasting cultural impact, some did not. But you have a storyline. Now, those often became formulaic, you know, especially like The Incredible Hulk. It was kind of the same story beats every week. But they involve the main character going to a place, having something happen, and doing something. I don't necessarily want it to be that formulaic with American Gods, but when you go to a place, but they were kind of doing that in the first season. They get to a place, had a thing they did it, and they moved on. Not, you know, there's no reason why they can't do that still going forward. You know, I don't want to see when they get to, what do we say, Lakeview, Lakeside? I don't want them spending the entire season there. Again, this is the problem Walking Dead had when it got really bad, was that it took a short story arc and blew it up into, you know, an 8-episode half season, you know, with something that could have been done in like 2 episodes. And it was very obvious that they were just spinning plates and coming up with stories that, with, you know, side characters that nobody necessarily cared about or that didn't really make sense. And it was stalling all the forward momentum of what could have been a compelling arc. But editing is important. You know, there's a reason why, you know, in film, you know, many times some of the best scenes are left on the cutting room floor. It's because they kill the momentum of the show, even if the scene itself on its own of the story is, even if the scene itself on its own is a compelling scene, it can just drag down the propulsion of the main plot that you're trying to get the characters involved in, you know. And you know, that's kind of what they're doing here. Whatever this forward momentum the show should have, and I don't see any, you know, is hurt by all these various sides. And you have a little vignette, that's fine, because it's always separated from the main story arc. It's touching on themes of the main story arc, but at least it's kind of separate from it. I just finished watching the second season of the FX show Legion, and it has its own little aside commentary narrated by John Hamm throughout the second season that's touching on certain ideas and themes that come up in the episode. Sometimes it's at the beginning of the episode, sometimes it's in the middle of the episode. But it doesn't take away from the bulk of the proceedings of the episode, what's going on. You know, it's its own little standalone thing. It makes its commentary and then quickly moves out. So I don't mind the asides. It's what are the characters doing? And really, we've asked this last week, what is Nancy doing? Playing chess with Ibis. What is Ibis doing? What is Bilquis doing? She was a priestess last week. She's back to the sex goddess this week. You know, pick something to do with the characters. Give them something to do that follows through more than one scene in one episode.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the whole African gods discussing a union against Wednesday and probably everybody else was very interesting. And we had a big discussion on that. When it came up, I think it was episode 4, and it went nowhere. We're now what, 4 episodes later, and the plot just seemed to like dropped.
Right. And if it's And it's in context of Nancy, and the way it was phrased, it was the African gods. Then we see with Sweeney and we see with the Djinn that none of the gods like him, like Odin, like Wednesday. But right now, all of his allies are just those three African gods and the one Hindu god. Not a Hindu god, sorry, Muslim god, the Djinn. Or, sorry, not Arabian. Might be better.
Right. Pre-Muslim, yes.
So, if you're going to be trying to set it up as a racial thing, maybe it would make sense to bring in a few of the other Nordic gods or, you know, or something in there to tie in with that. Because at this point, I don't see any reason for it to be a racial thing when all of the other gods, you know, hate Wednesday.
Right. Yeah, because it wasn't like they brought that up, I guess, the ethnicity and the African gods, and specifically sub-Saharan African gods, not Arabic African gods. And they had them talk about uniting against Wednesday and everybody else and create their own side story. And I remember we were discussing how that seemed interesting. So is there going to be three different factions now, the new gods, the old gods with Odin, and the old gods with the African sub-Saharan gods? And we were saying, yeah, I'll be curious to see what happens. That storyline pretty much is dropped. And then with Odin, or Votan, or Wednesday, they haven't brought back any other allies of his. And the ones that we have seen, like Chernabog and whatnot, have really just turned out to be cameos for those actors to play in the show, because they just disappear. And so, like you said, Wednesday is here in Cairo with the African gods, and yet it seemed like they were going to rebel against them or just suddenly say, we're not going forward, and just leaving them. And then the whole storyline is dropped, and it just felt one of the, like, a lot of things in this season that, and even last season, that were set up and just never were paid off. Like Easter is another example. So here, though, it doesn't seem like it was a problem because they lost an actress to play the role. It just seems like it was a plot that they were building and then they just, like, forgot about.
Right. And I would really like, at this point, because they keep saying, or at the beginning of at various points in reading stuff on the show, that the character of Loki was going to be coming back from the very first episode. Where is he?
Right.
You know, what happened to that character? We haven't talked about Technical Boy, because we're starting to, again, being all repetitive on stuff we've obviously talked about in other episodes, and
sure,
it's not unimportant.
But yeah, let's talk about Technical Boy and Z.
Yeah, do you understand what exactly was the whole thing with the who was it that planted the seed to bring Technical Boy back in the mind of Z? Right. How is this Technical Boy, his incarnation, different than the previous one? Is he back, a full ally again of Mr. World and Media?
It was very strange because Z was just playing video games or he was doing something, whether he was watching TV, playing video games or whatever. And then out of the blue, he just has this thought and he goes running over to the computer and he starts typing and he creates a program. And then the new Technical Boy appears. But you're right. There was nothing there that's made us know why he had this light bulb appear in his head to go and start typing and creating a new program into that.
Well, I get the idea. He was, you know, and that happens, right? Sometimes you have writer's block, you're stuck, and then you have that flash of inspiration, that moment. And sometimes it just comes over something completely random, you know, something completely innocuous. You just go, oh, wait, I know. And you run down, you bang it out. Was his inspiration to bring back Technical Boy? Was his inspiration how to bring back Technical Boy? Why did he bring back Technical Boy? what was he gaining from it? And Technical Boy kind of screws him over a bit at the in that. And I'm glad to see him back because you need more people on the other side than just media and world. And I think they make a decent triplet. I'm not sure how, though, is this Technical Boy different than the previous Technical Boy? And is the previous Technical Boy gone? Is he still locked up in that facehugger prison, you know, the VR prison? Or did he die? I don't know. Again, these are all things. And by the way, I should point out, we mentioned some of these things in our review of the last episode of Game of Thrones, where there were things that happened in the episode that were left unclear. You know, and but that for that show at least, that was something unusual. You know, where the fates of certain characters were not clearly established within the episode itself. There was a character alive or dead, and it was just poorly communicated. You know, and here it's a lot of stuff is just being communicated in a sloppy manner, and you're just left wondering what the hell is going on. And yeah, I don't know what to make of this. So what did you think? Anything particular?
No. The only thing I felt was the main point was to just bring back Technical Boy in the first place. So for whatever reason, they made Technical Boy die or be imprisoned or whatever for some reason, maybe for dramatic reasons earlier in the season. And this was a way to bring him back. Again, they had set up Z a couple of times, or at least one episode earlier in the season, with one of those vignettes before the credits that were pretty cool. But they didn't go anywhere really with them, except maybe a couple of times since. And yeah, I don't really know. Let me read what it says here on Wiki, and what the writer of Wiki, whoever wrote it, thinks. And they wrote, Z is able to help Technical Boy to rebirth as Quantum Boy. And that's interesting, obviously, because quantum is the future of physics, as we know, and computers and whatnot, who uploads massive digital information to Mr. World in new media. And that's pretty much it. That's all they write about that story plot in this.
Okay, but then why was Quantum Boy the same actor as Technical Boy when new media is a different actor than old media?
Right, that's a good point.
But I mean, we know the answer because old media quit.
Right. Well, and it is interesting because we did see Technical Boy in a third reincarnation back in the Donar, the great episode where he was Telephone Boy, basically.
Right.
You know, and yet we were already told that he was created, Technical Boy was created by Z. So we have to figure that if that was the case, Telephone Boy must have died somewhere between the time we see the Donar episode from 1935 to 1978 when he was created by Z. And then he's dead. He dies again, or is in prison or whatever, and he's recreated again in the modern age, meaning today, as Quantum Boy. And in all three instances, he is the same person. You're right, the same actor. To forgive the show, I will say that at least media, technically, at least in the book too, is what I'm told, actually takes the identity of the characters that he or she plays. So, for example, Media is a doppelganger in the book. And so that's why you could technically have different people playing Media. And that's why I felt that it was unnecessary to use Gillian Anderson to play all three roles in the first season. Of course, it's Gillian Anderson, so that's cool. And Marilyn Monroe, Lucille Ball, and David Bowie are all past and they, if they were still alive, would be too old to play the roles anyway that she was portraying. So I guess that's all. If I can forgive the show, I can think that Media was technically a dual ganger anyway. Well, I guess they're saying Technical Boy is not.
Right, and they've got, and they hit that more this episode with different faces on the TV, playing Media, different news anchors and whatnot.
That's true. Yeah, good point.
But yeah, that's a good point. Was the idea that I forgot that he was Telephone Boy. So I guess there was probably Telephone Boy. We were dealing with. Then let's argue Computer Boy, or, you know, Modem Boy.
Right.
You know, and there was probably somewhere in between there. We probably had TV Boy too. Right.
Yeah.
So now both Media and Technical Boy have been upgraded into a more modern incarnation, one more relevant to where the world is now than perhaps it. When the book was first being written, you know, 10 to 15 years ago.
Right.
And so that certainly makes sense.
Right. Yeah. Now 10, 15 years later from the book, internet, cell phones, quantum physics, all that stuff is more relevant today than, or didn't exist in the case of certain actual technological advances like smartphones didn't exist 15 years ago. So, yeah, that's a fair point to me.
All right. So, I don't know. Do you have anything more to add, to comment, or do we just want to just expressing frustration?
Yeah, that's the key. That's the key. That's the thing. This episode was obviously to talk about the Moon Shadow episode, meaning the season finale, as well as our wrap-up episode. Obviously, our wrap-up episode would begin to beat the drum again on certain issues we've had, from story plots that have been dropped to vignettes that didn't seem to move the plot to story quests that could have been removed, and so on and so forth. So obviously, as a wrap-up episode, we had to talk about those things again, I guess, even if it may sound like we're just repeating ourselves. And for this episode here, there really wasn't many aspects of the episode, to be honest. It was the War of the World thing, and like you said, it lasted longer than you would expect for a pre-credit scene. And then we have the Lara scene on the tombstones, as we discussed, and we discussed the Technical Boy or Quantum Boy's creation, and we discussed New Meteor and her trying to frame the folks for murder or other crimes as a swatting. And then we discussed the new identity, which is a setup for a new location, obviously, for next season, assuming next season happens. And I guess the only really thing we didn't discuss was Yggdrasil, I think that's how you pronounce it, the big tree, which sucks Wednesday into itself, into another dimension, to escape the police and the news and all that crap. And that's when he has all these weird flashes and figures out that he's actually the son of Odin. And so really, that was the only part, him actually being sucked into the tree, we didn't really talk about, because we did mention that he found out that he was Odin's son. We just didn't explain that he got sucked into the tree. So we pretty much talked everything about this episode. When you think about it. And then the only other thing we discussed it, but we didn't really talk about it, was Lara taking Sweeney's body. So let me ask you this. Do you think because of that he actually may still be alive or be resurrected in season 3, and that though the actor did the rounds as if his character died when he did the Media,
Microsoft is making a Halo TV series, and
oh, that's awesome!
And the actor has been cast as Master Chief.
Nice.
So I have a feeling he's probably not going to come back, or certainly not for very long.
Right.
However, that said, the way this show is, it's only 8 episodes. I don't know how much time the actors spend filming, especially when you have if you have Laura and Matt Sweeney doing their own thing like they've been doing the last 2 seasons.
Yep.
They don't have to necessarily be on the same filming schedule as all the other actors. So if he can get away with a couple of days of filming, you know, or a couple of weeks of filming during a season part of the year where the Halo show is not filming, maybe he can do both shows, right? I mean, we're not at the point where it used to be 26 episodes a season, you know, and that your filming was 9 months a year. Well, here, how many months is filming an 8-episode show for an actor who is in a completely different side story, right? You know, if when you were filming Cheers, all the actors were in the bar, and even if they didn't have anything to do in that episode, they had to be sitting there drinking their drink. You know, Sweeney didn't have to be there on the episodes that they were filming at the most of the episodes that they were filming at the funeral parlor. So maybe it'll swing, but I'm suspecting any return or anything they do with him will be limited at best. That's my guess. It is a very funny image to watch, you know, the diminutive Laura Moon carrying Matt Sweeney, and his legs are, you know, he's folded over top of her body and his legs are almost still touching the floor.
Right, right. Yeah, she's a short actress. I think she's like 5'1" or something like that. And he's like 6 feet.
Right.
So it's kind of funny. Yeah.
Oh, he's like 6'8".
Is he really that tall, the actor?
Well, yeah, Shadow Moon is like, the actor who plays Shadow Moon is, I think, something like 6'2", 6'4", something like that.
Okay.
And he stands clearly above him. So he is a big boy.
Yeah,
And once again, I'll say, if anyone is a fan of the actor, go back and check out the second season of The Wire, where he has a very prominent role as a dock worker.
And is this, you mean Sweeney or Shadow Moon?
Sweeney.
Okay. Yeah, Emily Browning's 5'2", so she's petite. She's similar to Amelia Clark or Macy Williams height.
Or my
Game
mom.
Of Thrones. There you go, your mom, yeah. But yeah, Ricky Whittle, right? Is he the guy that plays
Sweeney? Shadow Moon.
Shadow Moon, yeah, all right. He's 6'1". And what's the Sweeney's name is I know it's
Pablo.
Pablo, that's it. Pablo Schreiber, I think. Yeah, Schreiber. Pablo. I always knew it was like a Latin, a Spanish first name and a German last name. And he's 6'5".
Okay. Yeah. So he's big.
Yeah. Yeah. He's 2 inches taller than me, so he's a pretty tall guy.
Yeah. All right. So yeah, so that was pretty much it. Whether or not Sweeney's coming back, probably, like you said, there's a possibility because, you know, based off of separate filming schedules, there's a possibility. But usually when a character croaks in non-magical shows, they're croaked. You know, even Game of Thrones, even though in some cases characters have come back to life, usually when a character dies, they croaked. So here, being a supernatural show, it could be a red herring that he's dead and he may appear again. But again, you know, it's a shrug, I guess. It's not, you know, it's like, all right, whatever. All right, any other things, final thoughts on the season finale or the season itself or the series?
No, I'm going to put the ratings aside, the outside stuff, because that's not something that should really matter to a viewer or reviewer. I still want to really like the series. I like a lot of it, as I said. I want to root for it. I'm hoping that the new showrunner makes a big difference, just as it did, in my opinion, with The Walking Dead. So I'm not the cast is too talented. The chaos behind the scenes has been well chronicled at this point and well discussed. If they can get someone who has a vision and a direction and maybe come with a clear point to get to the end game, and don't just dawdle at wherever they end up at this at the Lakeview or Lakeside all season, you know, and have some actual real conflict between characters, actions with consequences, you know, basic stuff that deals with drama, then I think this show is salvageable. And hopefully this will be a blip on the radar. But I know I won't be able to get through another season of this the way that it is now.
Well, honestly, me and you, Mike, the listeners of this podcast don't know, but may have thought, based off of some of the times when we rant negatively about what we've seen, a few times this season we were almost considering to drop the podcast altogether. I remember after episode 3, we were like, well, let's give it one more week, and if it still stinks, we'll just do a final podcast and say that we've decided to end following the show. But then they had those two pretty good episodes there.
Yeah.
You know, and it shows you that the show has potential. It's just that, can they do it week by week like some TV shows can do? Again, it's tough to compare every show to Game of Thrones, because Game of Thrones is an anomaly, or Breaking Bad is an anomaly. But again, this show at least has shown that they can be entertaining and interesting and have things to talk about and be curious about. And like you said, you know, the viewership is important to stay on air, but it's not important to whether or not the show is any good. Because there's a lot of shows that are good that never find a following for whatever reason. So as long as they put good episodes together, then, you know, they may have some success. I mean, they do have technically a built-in audience of people who enjoy Neil Gaiman and the books. So you figure some people will eventually find the show anyway. The question is, like you said, can they get through another season of mediocrity or not, and even get to the third season, assuming the third season's any good? Would they even watch it, because they're already turned off because of prior seasons? So, and that comes down to, like you said, you know, it's hard to regain audience after people quit and stop watching. Walking Dead is an example for that. I watched the first 5 seasons, and then one day I said, this show sucks, and I stopped watching it. Now, that doesn't mean it does suck. It just means whatever they were doing doesn't work anymore for me, and I've never gone back to the show. So, again, that's going to be tough for anybody who has dropped this show to say, you know what, I'm going to give season 3 a chance, because maybe they're going to actually have a good story or not. But, again, we're here, and we can only hope that, yeah, maybe they do have a turnaround, and season 3 is good. And if it is good, when we start up season 3 of American Gods, Searching for American Gods podcast, then we'll be excited to do the weekly episodes and discuss things. And like you said, rather than say, well, I just can't do another season like season 2.
Yep.
All right.
So, yeah, all this is coming from frustration with love. I want it to be successful. I really, really genuinely do want it to be good.
Yep, same here. And again, this our opinions, whether people like our opinions or not, we're not here to influence you not to enjoy the show. If you love this show, that's a great thing, you know, because it's obviously for you and you're enjoying it. But again, we came in blind, hoping to enjoy a show that would be semi-popular, that a lot of people would talk about, and that we would enjoy specifically. And there's been some moments that's happened, some unfortunately not. But I'm assuming, especially since we're going to have a good year at least to take a break from the podcast, that when it re-comes back in a year from now, will be at least refreshed and not drained of like, oh no, not that. So I assume that we can say to anybody who listens to this show that we would be back for season three, at least to start, right? Assuming.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, look, and you know, we mentioned several other series in the podcast. I'm a fan of Walking Dead. You know, you're not, but you'd stopped watching the show after, I think, five seasons. I've stuck with it. I enjoy still the show, but I was perfect. But once the show was clearly spinning its wheels, you know, I didn't have a problem saying that, but I stuck with it. True Blood was a show I watched, but after season two or season three, it started having some real problems with the show. And sometimes it got really bad. You can criticize a show that you enjoy. You can criticize a show that you love. And I can't say it's, you know, this has only been two seasons in. It's not a show that I'm currently in a state of love with. I really did love that first season. Not right there now. It's intended to be constructive criticism. We're not saying, you know, this actor sucks, this sucks, that sucks. You know, we're saying this is the reason why there's a problem. And I know I'm not getting paid $10 million to be a showrunner, and I don't have the experience. But I've indulged way too many stories in my lifetime, watched way too much TV. You know, I like a lot of people, you know, we know what works. You know, we know that there's certain story elements that are missing, and you're missing basic fundamental things that are failing to connect. And it's we want it to succeed. If you have pushback on that, if you want to tell us why we're wrong, please, by all means, contact us at darkdiscussions@aol.com or find us on the Facebook group, Dark Discussions. And we'd be more than happy to engage with you. You know, we don't troll anyone except each other. So.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, I wasn't a huge fan of season one. It appears that you enjoyed it a lot more than I did. But again, I have a little more tough time to get into magical realism or dark fantasy or urban fantasy programming than the regular genre fan. However, I enjoyed it enough and see the high points of it from season one, and a lot of them were obviously more high than in season two. Oddly, season two, my favorite episode was the Dawn of the Great episode, as a story, a standalone story. But again, that episode, as Mike said earlier, probably could have been just deleted and it wouldn't have affected the main story. So there's some issues, but hopefully they'll correct them for season three. Here you can email us, as Mike mentioned, at darkdiscussions@aol.com. And the Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group. We will be around on our other podcasts. As we stated, we have two that are going on right now. The Dark Discussions Podcast, which has gone on for 8 years now, weekly, without any breaks. So we're always here at least once a week. And then, of course, the Game of Thrones podcast, You Know Nothing, Jon Snow, Game of Thrones podcast, which will be here for probably another 4 weeks, because we have three more episodes, plus we'll probably do a series wrap-up episode on that. And so you can still find us, even though this podcast will now go into hiatus, because the season's over, until season three, which will be, if we're lucky, in a year. If we're unlucky, it'll be another 1.5 to 2 years, like the break we had between one and two. So I guess that's pretty much it. Thanks for listening. Hopefully we didn't alienate anybody or upset anybody, because ranting can sometimes turn off people, even if we feel that it may have been somewhat constructive and honest, rather than just fanboys complaining. I think we've been fairly fair
I don't know what your opinion is, Mike.
I think if you look, I've been checking several review sites because I always like, you know, I feel how I feel. Reading some other reviews sometimes helps me find the words for it. Sometimes it helps me at least get a sense if I am being, you know, fair in what I see and what I'm criticizing, or if at least other people are seeing it. And almost every other thing I've checked, every other review I've seen for American Gods, whether for every whatever episodes I've checked, you know, they're all about the same. Some are more favorably inclined than others, but the criticisms are all kind of there. Everyone sees the issues. Some sees the issues differently than I do, or that we do, where they hammer or emphasize things differently. But this is all—it's, you know—it's Dark Discussions is our parent podcast. It's a ongoing discussion. It's a conversation. And, you know, by checking out what other people say, it is part of that conversation. Again, it's, and that, so I can't think that this is just, you know, we're not the, you know, the two guys who are here just to trash the show. You know, there's always some popularity or some people who find the best thing they can do is trash what's popular. We actually have one listener who likes to bash anything that's lowest common denominator that is remotely popular, and finds him and seems to at least put himself, or at least on Facebook, put himself above what the common people like to watch. That's not me. I don't think that's Phil. You know, we have our own particular taste. I like it. I don't like it. And the question is why? What's working for us? What's not working for us? If it works for you, great. Love it. And keep enjoying it. But yeah, like I said, I think that we're pretty much where most people are on the show right now. If you look at Rotten Tomatoes, I think it went from like having like a, you know, 80 and 90% scores for critics and audiences to like 50% and 70% scores. You know, so it's dropped 20 to 30 points from first season to second season among professional critics and viewers. So there, it's definitely taken a hit.
Yeah, yeah. Critics gave it 92% the first season and 58% the second season. And as a whole, because of the two seasons averaged together, that comes to be 75% based off of Rotten Tomatoes. So yeah, I mean, that shows you a dramatic drop from 92% is hugely strong. And then this season here, the critics only gave it 58%. And those are professional critics. So based off of that, whether people like critics or not, we do have a lot of people that listen to the show that will argue on the Facebook page that bleep critics, they mean nothing, I don't care, blah, 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 which is fine. But I don't think it is coincidental that we fairly praised season one similar to the critics did. And, you know, critics are now at 58%, which is actually a Rotten Tomato. And we've been a little more harsh this season too. So I think not surprising, we're pretty much lining up where some of the critics are lining up too. So I think that gives us a little more legitimacy in our viewpoints, and not just here to bash for no reason, as Mike says some folks may on social media, or who email us and give us their opinions. All right, so that's pretty much it. So thanks once again for listening to the American Gods, Searching for American Gods podcast. Hopefully we at least gave something to your viewership of the show. I mean, I love going off and listening to podcasts about Game of Thrones the next day, or reading reviews, and so hopefully we were able to do the same that other podcasts and reviewers do for us. And I guess with that, Mike, why don't you lead us out?
All right. So again, thank you for listening to Searching for American Gods, the final episode for the podcast for the foreseeable future. We have no idea when season 3 is returning. We just know that it is, and we will be back at least for an episode or two when that happens. In the meantime, if you've enjoyed listening to us, or if you'd enjoyed hating listening to us, you can listen to Phil and I on the main Dark Discussions podcast. Our next episode is about the movie We Need to Talk About Kevin, so that should be a pick-me-up. And then we were also continuing to do the last four episodes. We have four more episodes of You Know Nothing, Jon Snow, discussing the last three episodes of that TV series, as well as one wrap-up episode before that series forever goes away. And at some point, we'll also be doing Bullets, Brothels, and Bots for the season three broadcast of HBO's Westworld. So there's always the Facebook group. And there's always email at darkdiscussions@aol.com. There we go. I got it out.
Very good. All right. Thanks once again. And Mike, we'll talk to you on Dark Discussions about We Need to Talk About Kevin.
In 21 hours. Yay.